How long before you can make the jump to light speed?
Take a few moments to get the coordinates from the Navi computer.
Are you kidding? At the rate they're gaining?
Traveling through hyperspace ain't like dusting crops, boy. Without precise calculations, we'd fly right through a star or bounce too close to a supernova and then it'd end your trip real quick, wouldn't it?
What's that flashing?
We're losing a deflector shield.
Both strap yourselves in. I'm going to make the jump to light speed.
First of all, I love that movie. And of course, it's Star Wars Day coming up, but that's actually not what we're talking about. We're talking about what they do there. I mean, we see it in movies all the time. It's so easy to travel fast, jump to light speed or go to warp speed. But those are movies and we can't actually do that. Interstellar travel is not reality. Even if we wanted to travel just a few light years away, it would take thousands of years to get there at those current propulsion rates. So NASA is trying new and different things, such as a solar sail. What is that? How would it work? Well, Dr. Patrick Johnson is an associate teaching professor in the Department of Physics at Georgetown University and the author of The Physics of Star Wars and joins us now. Thank you so much for being here.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Can we talk about your book for a second? Because I'm a huge Star Wars fan. I love that you wrote this. So if we use that as an example, is it even theoretically possible to jump to light speed?
To get all the way to light speed, as far as we know, it's probably not possible to get all the way there. But in principle, you could get as close as you wanted to, as long as you don't quite reach actual light speed. Anything with mass has to go slower than light, but you can get pretty fast.
What about warp speed? That's big in Star Trek. Can we do warp speed?
Depending on which fiction you're using the language in, warp speed is going to be quite a challenge with current technology, but I feel like history is littered with scientists saying like, this will never be possible. And then 50-100 years later, who knows what we'll be able to do.
So what are we able to do right now? Like, what is this solar sail that NASA is working on?
Yeah, so the idea behind a solar sail is what most people think an actual boat sail is like. People picture you hang up a big sheet and the wind pushes the sail. Turns out boat sails are a little bit more complicated than that, but that's roughly what a solar sail does, except for it uses light bouncing off of a big sheet to propel your ship forward.
Okay, and are we realistically able to do that right now?
Yeah. I mean, it was first proposed long ago by Johannes Kepler, but it was kind of revitalized with suggestions of real missions in the 70s by Carl Sagan. He was a huge proponent. The Japanese Space Agency launched a mission Icarus back in 2010 that was kind of a proof of concept. And NASA has just launched their solar sail mission this week. And it's basically just deploy a big sheet of shiny material and let the light bounce off it, and that will propel your ship forward.
Okay, so how fast could that get us where we want to go?
It depends on how long you're willing to wait. The thing about solar sails is that they have very slow accelerations. We're talking about like millimeters per second squared. So it takes a long time to get up to speed. But the thing about the sun and other stars is that they shoot off a lot of light. And if you just deploy your sail and wait, you can get up to really, really fast speeds. And some propositions have also suggested that we could deploy a solar sail close to the surface of the Earth and then use high-powered lasers to propel them forward to get them going. And then they'd be able to go very fast. Some proposed ideas could get it up to 20% of the speed of light, which is faster than anything I've ever known a human-created object to go.
Okay, so if we could do that, 20% of the speed of light, where could that get us and how long would that take?
I mean, that could get us to the closest stars in our lifetime, which I just feel flabbergasted saying that as a possibility, but we could get to the next star system in a few decades and be able to potentially make recordings or measurements of neighboring stars, the planets that orbit those stars, maybe even be able to find habitable planets in the next star system over. That would be wild if it is able to happen and that we find them. But we have evidence that indicates that there could be habitable planets in the next star system over.
We just have to get there to find out, right? So this could theoretically go there to find out. So is this something that we could see used in the near future?
So right now, all the missions that are currently being done are more like proof of concepts rather than like, let us actually send something to another star system. But I mean, if the funding is there, we have the technology. Like, it's just a matter of whether people think it is a worthwhile thing to spend money on. But the scientific implications of being able to actually have measurement devices surrounding other stars and other planets outside our solar system could be just monumental.
There does seem to be a revived interest in space exploration, doesn't there?
Yeah, yeah. I think people's concerns about things like climate change, or I know there's always new media with kind of post-apocalyptic themes like Fallout, the new TV show, et cetera. So I think people think about what happens if Earth is no longer habitable. But even if Earth remains habitable for billions of years, the sun will eventually go out in 4.5 billion years. So humans will eventually have to find somewhere else to live. But we're talking at worst billions of years of time scales for that. So hopefully humans could figure out how to travel to other stars by then. But we have all of the pieces we would need to create interstellar travel satellites that could get there without humans. But we also have all the technology to send humans there. It's just a huge endeavor to be able to get a ship large enough to sustain humans for long enough to get out there.
Now, do you like watching science fiction movies, or do you find yourself watching them and going, well, that's not realistic and that could never happen?
I love science fiction, and I do love when movies try to get it right. But at the same time, movies are there to entertain, and I'm not the kind of person who crosses his arms and is like, oh, you couldn't hear those laser blasts in space, because I'm there for entertainment.
But you thought it if you didn't say
it. I have thought it, but at the same time, I'd like to take the challenge of saying, like, okay, this movie has presented a reality to me. Can I find a way to justify this reality using the laws of physics? And frankly, some of the time is not possible, but other times it's like, yeah, there is a way you could justify this, like the Han Solo making the Kessel Run in a unit of distance. Like, there are ways to justify that, and the movie Solo has given one answer to that, but there are lots of ways to justify that line without it having to be just somebody got the science wrong.
Right, and I've heard that one of the movies that is big for that is the movie Interstellar, where mm-hmm. there's yeah. a lot of scientists like yourself watch that and go, yeah, that's realistic.
Yeah, yeah. And that was a science advisor, Kip Thorne, kind of wrote a very short version of that movie. And he is a Nobel Prize winning scientist who works on LIGO, among other things, throughout his career. If certain ideas in physics are accurate, everything in Interstellar would be physically possible. Now, some of the theories that would underlie what happened in Interstellar have not been experimentally verified, but are not inconsistent with all the experiments that we've done. And I feel like a lot of my friends kind of like to talk bad about Interstellar, but I personally
Why?
Really, really like the movie. It visually, emotionally, I just think it does a really, really cool thing and explores some of the implications of science, scientific principles like time dilation and stuff, and how that could affect a crew on a mission like that. I think it's just really fascinating.
Why do your friends like to trash talk Interstellar? What don't they like
about
it?
I mean, the most common thing I hear is people are like, oh, well, the thing that can cross time and space is love, and that's the theme of the movie. And, like, sure, I do feel like that if that's the message you walk away from the movie with, you could kind of be a little grumpy about it. But I think
you got to make it palatable for the masses, Dr. Johnson.
Yeah. But also, I don't know, I love relatives that have passed, and I'm sure when I have passed, there will be people who still have love for me, and so there is a level of that that is true. But also, the way in which it is presented, I feel like there is a way to interpret it that way, but I right. think there's a way to see the movie just in a purely hard science fiction way that is just entertaining.
I find that these types of movies are valuable to sell these ideas to the general public, mm-hmm. aren't they? Just this idea that we need to invest in finding a way to travel at these fast speeds. This is what puts the mm-hmm. idea in the general public.
Yeah, and there are so many scientists these days that talk about how watching Star Trek when they were young inspired them to go into this field, and there are so many things where it's like this was a thing somebody dreamed up in a book or a TV show or a movie, and then that inspired somebody to go into a field, and then they designed a device where it's like, oh, we have these magical touchscreen robots that can access all of human knowledge, and that was a pipe dream 100 years ago, and that inspired people to be like, why don't we just create that? And sure, it took decades of work, many people contributing, but these science fiction pieces of culture are able to inspire the future of science. And I think that is wonderful. And I can only dream of being a small piece of that as a science communicator.
I love that. Well, thank you so much for joining us this morning.
Thank you so much for having me. It's been a pleasure.
Canada may be known for its landscapes and friendly people, but beneath the surface lies a darker side of crime, history, and the paranormal. Since 2017, the award-winning Dark Poutine podcast has explored the shadowy corners of the Great White North and beyond, delivering chilling tales from a uniquely Canadian perspective. Hosted by Mike Brown and Matthew Stockton, with over 300 episodes and fresh releases every Monday, Dark Poutine is your weekly ticket to the creepier side of Canada. Listen to Dark Poutine on Apple, Spotify, Amazon Music, or wherever you get your podcasts.